Here's Higden. It sits up nicely for Michael Higden. And what a start for Motherwell. And here's Malt, and he goes for it for Son. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. And could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. A week on from a heavy defeat against Rangers and an exit from the Europa League. I'm joined by Andy Patterson and Scott McClure to look back and two disappointing results for the Steelmen. We'll reflect on the transfer window, one that has been slightly different over the last 2 to 3 months, it must be said. We'll also look ahead to the next Scottish Premiership match, which is a meeting with St Mirren. On the 17th of October, we'll discuss the Kilmarnock game that fell foul to COVID-19. And I think that should be about us, other than quite a jam-packed show there. Guys, welcome along.
Evening.
Thanks again for having us, Andy.
Andy, I'll start with yourself. And let's start with the Hapoel Beersheva game. Almost 2 weeks ago to the day we're recording. A 3-0 defeat in the end, and what was a really evenly matched contest. I think it's fair to say that our Israeli opponents were just that bit more streetwise, they had that bit more European pedigree and nous, and that's what took them through on the night.
Yeah, it was a disappointing outcome in the end. Perhaps a slightly flattering scoreline for them. I think for a good chunk of it, up until the kind of red card, we were still in it. Certainly being outclassed. I thought they were very much on a par with us. A few folk kind of disagreed in the aftermath, the remarks I'd made in Steelman Online, but I felt it was akin to maybe going to say Hearts in the Scottish Cup away, or a St Johnstone or a Kilmarnock side that were kind of playing pretty well. You know, they weren't of the levels of an Old Firm side. I felt like on our day we could have, in different circumstances, we could have won that game. Disappointing the way it ultimately kind of transpired. You could break it right the way down to almost in the first half, just before half time, they had a set piece. They put the ball into the box, and he scored with a set piece opportunity. Slightly after half time, we also had a set piece, put it into the box, and the opportunity that fell to Declan Gallagher kind of went over the bar. And small margins kind of swing games in different ways, and you could break it down to that being the kind of turning point of it. After that, with the ridiculous kind of sending off, and we were kind of slightly riding our luck a wee bit in the break by that point on occasion, but disappointing the way it culminated in a 3-0 loss. But you hope when it comes to these European games that you mentioned about the fact that the Israelis were streetwise, and you would love to think that we qualify often enough for Europe that those kind of lessons are learned, the experience will be kind of used fruitfully next time we come up against similar opposition. But the danger is that it's that long in between times that we actually qualify for Europe that, you know, could be a whole different set of players that are representing us the next time, and you know, you meet the same problems as we did, you know, in Israel. But take the positives, I suppose. We're good wee bit financially better off for our efforts in the competition. The downsides, of course, have been never actually got to see, or very few of us will have got to see the team play in Europe, and you kind of fear for when that next opportunity might be.
Scott, I guess it was a game of that was decided on mistakes more than anything else. You lose a free kick bang on half time. The defence seemed to rejig themselves to defend that set piece after defending manfully throughout the majority of the first half. Stephen O'Donnell loses his man, and before you know it, you're going in at the break, a goal behind. Declan Gallagher, first booking, it's just a cynical foul, really, but about a minute later, he's pulling his man in the box. It's a second yellow card, and suddenly you're down to 10. You've got to defend a penalty, and you're on the brink of going out. And after that, really, it's a case of almost trying to save face, 2-0 down, and really, really substantial temperatures as well. You've on the back of a run of fixtures that were particularly arduous, and I know that we came out on top in the majority of those games, but, and as we'll go on to talk about with the Rangers game, the weariness and the tiredness began to take its toll as well, and perhaps that affected some of the decision making in the game.
I think that for me, taking away the sending off, and I just don't think we created it enough. It was a typical Motherwell performance in Europe where we always seem just to go out and want to try and sneak a goal and then possibly try and defend that lead. But I just wasn't overly impressed with it. I personally think that they were a bit better than us, whether it's not just down to experience, the way that their players were behaving. I mean, they could easily have had a player sent off for the treatment of Tony Watt alone. And I think that would have certainly made a difference. But the mistakes were there. The defensive mistakes were there. Declan Gallagher, I wouldn't say, like they say, done. It's just one of these things. He's been so good for so long, and he's had one bad game, and I read a lot of people kind of writing him off and saying he's not been the same since Scotland. I don't entirely agree with that. I don't think he's been as good this season as what he has last season, but we're kind of trying to find the best formation at the moment and the best personnel to play in that positions, and I think it's unfair to single out him. It seems to be the kind of poison chalice of whoever we nominate to be our captain. Certainly, I mean, you're talking about the tiredness. That is a factor. I mean, Burnham with the brilliant performance at Pittodrie, travelling up there, probably staying away from home, then going away to Israel, then coming back, going over a period of time, and then you're at home to Rangers. It's easy to say, like, listen, they're professional footballers and that's what they're paid to do, but let's not forget that circumstances have been strange over the last few while, and that probably has been a factor because a lot of the players just will only be used to it. But I think some of the criticism aimed at particularly Declan Gallagher, it is quite unfair. I mean, it's happened to be with Carroll McHugh, Peter Hartley, and it seems now that when you become the captain, you're not allowed to make any mistakes, and I think that's a wee bit unfair. I've seen people on social media and stuff saying, oh, Alan Campbell should be the captain. I couldn't disagree with that any further. I just want Alan Campbell to continue what he's doing and not change anything at all. But at the end of the day, mistakes lose you games, and that's what we did. But at the same time, we didn't. Did we deserve any out of the game? My opinion, we didn't.
Just a final one on the Bersheva game, Andy. It obviously gives us a chance to reflect on the Europa League campaign that we had. And we get through here into the third qualifying round. In normal circumstances, we would have played six games to get knocked out at that stage, but it was one-off games. We start with a really emphatic win, despite the fact the scoreline perhaps didn't reflect the pattern of play over the 90 minutes against Glentoran. You move on to the Coleraine game, where the first 45, it could have been as many as we liked, and then in true Motherwell fashion, almost trying contrived to find a way to lose the game. Scrapes through in penalties with 10 men. And then we fall to more experienced streetwise opposition, as we've already alluded to. But despite that, a team that we may look back on as a team that we had a real good chance against. And I think Stephen Robinson mentioned it as well, that you could see the belief in the players in the first half an hour that, hold on a minute, we've got a right good chance of getting to the playoff. And perhaps the way that it panned out from about 40 minutes onwards is going to live with the players for a wee bit of time, and also be a bit of a source of regret for the manager, because you see what happened in the following round with Bersheva edging out Pilsen to make the group stages, and then they've got the likes of Leverkusen and Nice in the group stage draw. So I know I'm getting a bit carried away considering we get put out of the competition 12 days ago, but yeah, I think there's that wee bit of regret when I look back on our Europa League campaign.
I think there's regret, certainly. I don't think it's quite on a par with the Odense outcome there, where we were, you know, we get the score the penalty and you've 10 minutes against 9 men, or whatever it was, to take it to extra time where you did another half an hour against 9 men for the kind of group stages. I don't think it was quite at that kind of level, but certainly it's a missed opportunity, and it's added to a few missed opportunities that we've had over the years. Again, I come back to the point that your additional regret is the fact that we're not a team that's guaranteed by any manner of means to qualify for Europe every season. So, you know, that disappointment is potentially going to linger and rankle for, you know, however many seasons, and, you know, unless something kind of changes. Granted, we're not a million miles away for the kind of the qualification spots for the new European competition that'll kick in. But, you know, you look back and the gaps between qualification that we've had over the years since we first qualified, and, you know, some of them are fairly lengthy, spit it out. And you just, it would be really disappointing if that's the kind of the last memory that we have of our kind of time in Europe, of waiting a few years for another opportunity to kind of right that wrong.
We'll move on to the game 3 days later. And it certainly wasn't a hard luck story by any matter of means, the 5-1 home defeat to Rangers. Scott, we mentioned going into the game that a record against Rangers in league action is nothing short of abysmal. And that belief just seems to not be there when it comes to going toe-to-toe with Rangers. Yes, they were assisted by the fact they got their usual dodgy penalty, and in fact they get two dodgy penalties, but I don't think anyone could argue that the scoreline didn't reflect the pattern of play. Rangers were completely dominant. Motherwell were very, very standoffish and very, very below par. It was almost a return to the poor standards that we set in the early part of the season. A really disappointing one in a game that I thought we could have just competed that bit better in.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? We didn't compete. I often say to myself, though, what would feel worse? A dodgy 1-0 defeat when we've played really well, or when we deserve to, what we get? You don't. I personally don't feel as bad. It looks worse on paper than what it actually feels. It was just brutal watching it. It was like, at no time did we ever think, even when it was nothing each for a short period of time, you thought, we're just not at the races today. And then we can put it down to, I've already discussed the travel, but we can only use that excuse for so long. In relation to the penalties, I think that it's been well documented that at the end of the day, the referees are told that it's a penalty or it's not. And we can't argue with the fact that the handball rule is really confusing. That's all right if it's consistent across the board. When we had a couple that were touch and go, and we didn't seem to get the benefit of the doubt, it was, in fact, the opposite. Would it made a difference to the outcome of the game? Probably not. I think we just need to forget about that game. And the unfortunate thing was that the way that you forget about it is go and put a performance in against Kilmarnock. So we're left with this kind of gap with the frustrating international break, dwelling on two really, really negative performances. And it's kind of overshadowed the brilliant and kind of season high so far of Scudding at Aberdeen. But at the end of the day, as I said, we just need to move on for it. It just dwells a wee bit because we've not had a game since.
And it certainly demonstrates how quickly things can turn around in football. A week's a substantially long time. You look back in the victory at Pittodrie, 3 days before that, you were advancing in the Europa League, beating St Johnstone, albeit not in emphatic style, the week before at Fir Park. And then things turned in their head, an 8-1 aggregate defeat, if you like, with the 3-0 on the Thursday, 5-1 on the Sunday. It's a disappointing way to go into the international break, albeit not the way we expected to. We thought we'd have another league fixture.
That's right. I mean, we did kind of look ahead before the kind of European and the Rangers game and speculated that it wasn't entirely unlikely that we would end up with not so much the scorelines, but the outcomes of the games against Hapoel and Rangers. So, in some respects, the outcome's not a massive shock. What we can take a positive from that is that it's not a million years ago that we were wondering where the first league win was going to come from, or any league win, in fact, or any win. That we'd had an iffy start, and you know, suddenly we were on a run where I think it was four wins from five, or four undefeated games in five, or something along those kind of lines. So you know, we can certainly, you know, get back into that, some kind of run like that, and the kind of next three fixtures, as you allude to, are certainly games where there's a possibility, or certainly ones that we should be targeting for points.
It was then on to Kilmarnock, and that game eventually postponed. There was a bit of uncertainty right up until about 1 o'clock on the Friday afternoon. Kelly had reported earlier on in the week that three of the players had tested positive for coronavirus. They were having to self-isolate. Then following that, another three players reported to have the virus. The game eventually cancelled. It was quite uncertain whether Kilmarnock were going to be forced to play the game. Talk of precedents been set when it came to St Mirren and the fact that they were struggling to field a goalkeeper for their game against Celtic and Hibernian. In the previous month, we've obviously had games cancelled with Aberdeen and Celtic as well earlier on in the season. In the end, I think they came to the right decision in terms of the safety of our players, the safety of the Kilmarnock players, and obviously the staff associated with both football clubs. So you do go to the midweek and Falkirk are awarded a 3-0 victory over Kilmarnock, because they're still not able to field a side that Alex Dyer believes is capable of playing competitive football. So this is another turning point in the season and perhaps gives a bit more fear to the fact that it's going to be very tricky to have full cards of fixtures on a weekly basis, because as we see in the Daily News updates, numbers continue to rise. Football and footballers in particular are obviously training in big groups. They are going to be susceptible to picking up this illness or the symptoms of it anyway, and it's going to cause cancellations.
I think the frustrating thing is that there doesn't appear to be a black and white league rule in relation to it, despite there being one in the League Cup. However, in saying that, I think if the ball was in our foot and it was our players that had got the virus, then we would have been saying, well, there's nothing that we can do about it. The game just needs to be postponed. So I can see the arguments for both sides of the fence. As you said, the most important thing is that that this, everybody's kind of health and safety and stuff like that was looked after. And that was obviously what the main thing was to be done. But I just don't know going forward how this is going to play out. I mean, the only thing that I will say is, though, is if in comparison to, all right, England's only been on the go for a few weeks, but look at the amount of incidents that we've had in Scottish football, the amount of players that have tested positive, the amount of squads that might be starting, for example, Sadio Mane with Liverpool and Thiago have got it, and I think Shaqiri's now got it as well. But they don't seem to have had the kind of same issues as what we've had. It might just be coincidental at the moment, and it might intensify now that the Championship and all the other leagues are starting. But I don't know. I don't think anybody really is going to have a definitive answer on how we deal with it. Do I think that the season this year is going to finish? If we continually go the way that we're going, then I really don't think that it can go to plan. I remember listening to Neil Doncaster at the start of the season, and he was going on about them only having so many windows for postponed fixtures. And that's taking into account, we're not even taking into account the weather. So I really think it's going to be problematic to have it finished in time, bearing in mind that there's an alleged major tournament, the Euros, that some players may or may not be involved in. I just find that it's baffling. Like, for example, why are they not cancelling the League Cup? Just doing away with it. I know that there's sponsorship money and stuff like that, but I mean, does that look using a common sense approach?
Yeah, I would have thought that the League Cup, particularly in its current form, continuing it like this was a bit of a risky move. So you've obviously got the four group games for each side still to be played as well now, before you get into the round of 16. So you've got potentially what, for a team, let's say Hearts get to the final, that's 9 games. I'm right in saying that. No, I'm not. It's 8 games to get to the final. It's 8 games on top of your league season. Better example, Hibs get to the final and play 8 games. They've got 38 league games to play as well. They've got a Scottish Cup semi-final at the end of this month. So it's going to be incredibly difficult. And that's what, taking into account no Hibs player, or there's no point where Hibs have to have a period of isolation for the players or such like, but then you're relying on every one of your opposition teams as well, and I just think it's almost an impossibility given the way the figures are and how common it's been in the first couple of months of the season. So I think we're really operating in tricky times, and I think that it was a bit of a bold decision, a bit of a stupid decision, really. Maybe with hindsight in 2020, playing the 38 games and having our season.
I think it boils down to money, didn't it? Certainly boils down to money, Andy. That's what unfortunately, every kind of it's a business now, and the SFA hierarchy, whoever else, will be looking at it and saying, we can't afford to lose this sponsorship deal, and that's taking precedence over actually probably making it run a bit more efficient.
But the thing is, that's all well and good, but if you end up having to curtail your season in March as you did with last season, then you end up looking pretty bloody stupid, and you've got yet another season where competitions are liable to either be completely written off, or like this season's Scottish Cup, you're still playing last season's Scottish Cup at Christmas time. So it's, I don't really know why it wasn't even a suck it and see type scenario, where you see how the first couple of months of the season go and then perhaps make your big scheduling decisions. But instead, we seem to have rushed into it, maybe with pound signs in our eyes, and maybe with the situation that clubs have lost money from the season being curtailed early already. There's obviously the possibility that the fans won't be allowed back into the stadiums at any point this season. Again, that's another one that we'll go on to talk about that, but I think even since Ben Banks was on and talking about the situation with fans being allowed back into stadiums, I think that's possibly went back a few steps since we last recorded. So I think that it feels like a really dangerous time for Scottish football clubs just now, and I don't think they've been helped by the Scottish footballing authorities in the setup of both the cup competitions and also the league season as well. Yes, I know that our lower leagues haven't started just yet, but I just think it's all madness. I really do. I could not believe when I checked the schedules, and before we came on, I was speaking to Andy about this. The fact that, I must admit, I just look at the fixtures on a daily basis on mobile phone. I was surprised to see that there was fixtures on this week, especially with internationals as well. It's not very common to clash with the Betfred Cup. But it just seems absolutely crazy that, and already two matches have fallen foul. Falkirk, Kilmarnock, and then earlier today, the D against Forfar. So I don't know where this ends. I think if anyone knew where it ended, they'd be very, very wealthy at this moment in time. But Scottish football has been given a licence and all these special privileges. But I think they've taken it too far, and I think it's really going to bite them.
I think I totally agree with you. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I'm thinking off the top of my head, and the SPL clubs then, because obviously a lot of our fringe players and under-20s aren't getting games. Do they attempt to turn it into that kind of tournament? Does that disrespect the sponsors? I don't know. But I just think it's madness that we're virtually in the same format, that even if they turn around and said turn it into a knockout, it's just, as I've already said, that I think it's the pound signs that's actually ruling rather than anything else than common sense. And I think if you ask the majority of fans at any club, they would say that they're exactly in the same situation. Wouldn't they want the League Cup to go ahead if it was going to mean that it's going to interfere with the league?
Yeah, certainly
I think,
dangerous times as well.
I think to be fair, though, whenever this was kind of put together, you know, you're going back a few months now. Say what you want about the league being concluded early last season, but in doing so, it's enabled the top flight at least to start on time. Now, that may prove to be a very wise decision in starting it in time as we see what goes forward. Now, we don't, as you say, we don't have an unlimited window of opportunity to play the games, but that extra month that you've had on ahead of quite a number of other kind of leagues in Europe may be the difference between the league season being, you know, chopped early or reaching its conclusion. Also need to keep in mind as well that the lower leagues are already working towards an abbreviated league campaign as well. They're not playing their full quota of what they would normally play. So there is some contingency further down the leagues. But in fairness again, this was nobody can see into the future when this was kind of put together, the plans. And whilst I think you're fully correct that, you know, the legalities will be such that if they didn't fulfil the commitments in terms of broadcasting agreements and sponsorship, then there is every chance that clubs would be hit with an additional financial blow, and that playing the games out is maybe the least worst outcome. But you know, I have a little bit of sympathy with them with the scheduling of it. But just need to see how things go in terms of whether the kind of virus eases up sufficiently. But you do think that there has to be something put in place. You can't have it black and white. Clearly that's not going to work. But you know, there has to be a wee bit of kind of some sort of familiarity of what's going to happen in circumstances where, you know, clubs aren't able to fulfil their commitments does it work in a certain amount of players kind of limit? I think that was certainly mooted in France at the start of the season, where I think PSG were the team that were missing five or six. And I think the French league had some sort of limit that up to a certain amount you still had to fulfil the fixture. Whether they have something in mind along those kind of lines that they can introduce, but you know, it does kind of have that feeling. It's kind of, you know, closing the gate a wee bit, even if they did do something new after the kind of horses bolted.
This week's MSC podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped has just launched in the UK and they're here with an absolute screamer to deliver the best tools for your below-the-waist grooming experience. The Manscaped engineering team has perfected the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 in the UK. The Lawnmower 3.0 is simply the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology, your snags will be reduced. The trimmer's battery also lasts 90 minutes. You could be shaving your nether regions for an entire football match, although we do recommend taking a little water break at half-time, of course. The Perfect Package 3.0 comes with the new and improved Lawnmower waterproof cordless body trimmer, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag. And you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code MONDOWELL at manscaped.com. And be one of the first in Scotland to try their amazing product. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code MONDOWELL at manscaped.com. This football season, upgrade your backline of defence and choose Manscaped for your most important male grooming needs.
What about in terms of the decision to postpone the game rather than award us the 3 points and a 3-0 victory? It obviously happened only 4 days later when Falkirk were taking on Kilmarnock, albeit in a different competition. There's been different reactions to albeit different scenarios in terms of teams not being able to fulfil fixtures for whatever reason. What's the take in that? For me, I thought at the time it was a very sensible decision. Kilmarnock having six players out would mean that the rest of the squad has to isolate. This could happen to any team and really should they be punished for it. It wasn't like an Aberdeen 8 situation or Ballingolly at Celtic. These decisions were made in stupidity rather than just sheer bad luck, which it seemed to be with Kilmarnock. But to have two different outcomes for the same scenario is a real head scratcher.
That's what I was alluding to earlier. Whether or not it's just been that I've not researched this to confirm, but whether or not there's a rule set in place for the Scottish Premier to the SPFL in the League Cup, whether there's different sets of rules that are already established. So I'd imagine that's the case. But I think what we need to look at is it's quite evident that this pandemic's not going to go anywhere, is it? And where do we, what happens with the next fixture? Do we just continually postpone the games until we've got to the stage where it's going to be impossible? And then if they go back and they change it and they penalise a team and they award the 3 points, then that's going to cause an issue, because it could be at the stage where we are either fighting to get into the top six, fighting to get into Europe, or God forbid that we're in the relegation, and these 3 points are all the difference. So I think they need to have a sit down and decide exactly what they're going to do going forward. Personally, if it was like if we weren't in this situation and it was to do with injuries and they were all kind of above board, then I wouldn't want the game forfeited. But going forward, and it's not me getting 3 points, the common sense for me would be that if your club can't meet the fixture because of COVID, then it needs to be the 3 points just to ease the fixture congestion. Simple as that.
Yeah, you would have to think there's going to be a tipping point here where they are going to have to take drastic measures, but I think that could start a whole shit show as well in terms of, well, why didn't this happen to us when it happened early on in the season, and kind of what if scenarios, which kind of almost in the ilk of last season, can bring legal ramifications and such like as well. So, it's a real strange one, and it's so difficult to discuss in terms of, I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer in many of the scenarios that we've been faced with so far this season. Another debate that continues to rage on is fans being allowed back into the stadiums, and I saw before I came on tonight a few Middle fans getting on at the club to say something about fans being allowed back into the stadium. The English football authorities have written an almost open letter to the fans to say that they're looking at ways they can reintroduce spectators into stadiums. That being said, Andy, given what we've just spent the last 15 minutes discussing, and what I mentioned earlier on with Ben Banks when he was on the last time, and he was saying that he thought it was very unlikely by the end of 2020 you would have fans back inside stadiums in any sort of number, I don't feel like we're any further forward in regards to that. And in fact, if anything, we've possibly taken a few backward steps.
Yeah, it seems increasingly unlikely. It's difficult to make an argument for it at the current time, particularly when the number of cases appears to be on the rise. And there's all sorts of, you know, what about this sector? What about this part of the entertainment industry? What about the next part? And it's difficult. I'm not so sure there's too many like for like comparisons that you can actually make. And again, I'm kind of running the risk of repeating what we've kind of discussed in kind of earlier episodes of it, and the logistics of it are going to be tricky enough as it is. Not all of the kind of stadia that we use, you know, lends itself for easy access and for exiting at the end of games. And you know, you kind of consider the John Hunter stand where, you know, there's half a dozen turnstiles or so within the space of about 10 feet. You know, you're using that one entry point, the one exit point. How do you, is it like being back at school where you're doing like a row at a time when you get to full time to exit out? You know, do you sit there if you've been pumped 5-0 in January, you take that Rangers result and you ordinarily you get to early into the second half and you'd be people be, you know, use Frazzle's analogy in Twitter, he was looking for his cardboard cutout to get moved over to Club 100 for on the hour mark to get his first round in. And you know, that would be the reality would be if you've got an outcome like that where you're sitting getting towed, you're going to be looking to leave. And how does that go with the logistics where they would anticipate that you would be a nice orderly run of people leaving the stadium and things? So there's so many logistics in there that, you know, who organises this? Do we take Motherwell as a club? What kind of staff have we got to organise these things and put them in place and manage them? What is going to be the cost in terms of stewarding to be able to facilitate that? And you know, is there a question there that some clubs are content knowing that it could be more hassle than it's worth until you reach a point where it becomes financially better that there's people in rather than just a token number of supporters being in there. I mean, again, we've had the discussions before that you're not really learning anything from 300 people being placed in a stadium of Pittodrie's capacity, 20,000. You're not really learning anything with 700 people being in Murrayfield. The true test of it is when you get something close to, you know, normality, or at least the point where clubs start make it financially worth their while to be able to open up their stadia and you know, take an income through gate receipts and what have you. So it's just so difficult, and managing all of that or trying to push that argument at the current time where the numbers don't look particularly good, it seems a non-starter for however long in the future.
Well, let's be realistic about it, right? You're not allowed to go to anybody else's house now. You're not even allowed to go into your parents' house. But if that's the where we're at the moment, we're not going to get into the stadiums before the end of this season. So there's absolutely no way or until there's a vaccine. So I think you can just write off this season. Let's be realistic. I mean, there's absolutely no way that anybody's going to make a decision that is going to affect public health. Because football, if they do open the gates and there's an outbreak, then it's whoever's made that decision. And nobody's willing to put their neck in the line for that. And rightly so. If I was having to make that decision, the easy decision is to say, well, it seems to be working all right now. The clubs will just need to cut their cloth accordingly. And we're at least allowing you to have football back on the TV. And to be honest with you, I'm starting to get used to it. I am missing going every week. But at the end of the day, if we're all honest, we're probably just looking. I think sometimes we look at football differently for any other aspect of life. And we just need to be patient. It's shite that I've not been to a game for I don't know how long. It's not going to change anytime soon. Football's back, not the way we want it, but at least we've got it on the telly and we're not having to talk about Muller will be doing Zoom quizzes and stuff like that. Although it was enjoyable, but if it was continuing on, it was driving us mad. At least we've got it the way it is now. But realistically speaking, as I've said, it's not going to be until, I think common sense will be, it'll be August next year before we're back in.
And there's also the argument, of course, of how important football is to people's mental health and the lift and the adrenaline and the camaraderie that comes with being a football supporter and being inside the stadium. That being said, Andy, I think we've kind of alluded to already, the circumstances are going to be that different should you be in a stadium with only 500 people in it and all distanced and wearing masks and such like, that it's not going to be the same. I think that as much as we obviously have to, and exactly like the pandemic itself, I think a lot of people have struggled mentally. It's been very unprecedented times. It's been very different. It's very uncertain as well. I've found myself personally in the last couple of days when it's like the kind of will they, won't they scenario, and it's the information's somewhat drip-fed to you, and we might make an announcement tomorrow or maybe Wednesday now, and we might do this or we might not do this. And just tell me what's happening so at least I know how to react or at least kind of prepare myself for what comes next. I think that it's almost, as Pepe alluded to, kind of adjusting to football as it is just now and realising, as important as it is, it's not the be-all and end-all, and there's much more important things going on in the world. And as much as I've been critical of the authorities' decision to play the season in its full format in the top flight and have these Betfred games on tonight and such like, I suppose as football fans we should consider ourselves quite lucky that the sport that we love so much and is continuing to go during these uncertain and difficult times, and we do get that wee bit of escape, even though it's not inside the stadium as we've been so accustomed to over however many years we have had following our football clubs.
Well, I'm just looking at the Hamilton score at Gala Bank, and they're getting towed 3-0 at half time. Who was it that wanted the League Cup scrapped? But in all seriousness, we have to kind of put it in context of what it is. And you're right, and everything has been a process in life of adaptation and readjustment as to how we kind of live our lives and what you do, what the priorities are within it. And We just have to put it in the context that it is at the current time. It's vital for many of us are following our football for the reasons that you've mentioned, the socialising with family and friends that you might not otherwise see any other time of the kind of week or month. these kind of relationships, you know, the camaraderie, everything like that that you've already spoken to. But again, you're absolutely right. It just has to be put in the kind of context of the times, and we take the positives that we have, that, you know, we're able to sit and follow games on TV, and that there is the kind of the world's kind of competitions that there are, that there's really an evening where there isn't a game that we can watch and use it as a diversion from kind of current events, and we'll switch you off for an hour or two watching the games, and you take the positives even in terms of watching Motherwell, the ability for sitting having a beer or two watching the team, and which you wouldn't do in a kind of normal situation, but those are obviously arguments for another day. So we just have to take the positives of the situation as we find it currently. It's not going to be forever, as kind of Nicola Sturgeon said at one of our press conferences not so long ago, and, you know, we just have to, as harsh as it is, suck it up, take the advice that they give us, and once we get through the other side of this kind of period, we're going to have an absolute ball whenever we get back and seeing the team live and in the flesh.
For about 5 minutes, then you're going to say, oh, I wish we were just watching it in the house, because this is shite. That's exactly what will happen.
That's that wonderful glass half full attitude that we have you on here for. Thank you very much for that. I was almost kind of inspired by Andy's words, and you brought me right back down to earth again, Lynn, the same way that 5-1 game at Fir Park a couple of weeks ago did. Something that I put a positive tend on, shall we say, a transfer window where Alan Campbell remains a Motherwell player. Devante Cole also returning to Fir Park. He signed on Friday, Andy, and a player that I don't know if I would call it an inspiring signing. I think Devante Cole, during his loan spell last season, performed fairly well. It took him a wee while to get going. He obviously had that horrendous miss at St Johnstone, but then found the net 5-10 minutes later to get off the mark, and added a few goals before departing the club in January. He's back after not really hitting the heights that perhaps he was expected to do when he went to Doncaster. It's a chance to make up for lost time, I guess, for Devante Cole. He joins a Motherwell side that have got a raft of striking options, but none of which tend to score many goals.
No, there's so many echoes of the kind of Chris Long return. He's long stood accused by a lot of people of not looking particularly happy that he was at Fir Park, and, you know, the accusation was that he felt it was beneath him and didn't really want to be here. And I think the same could be levied at Devante Cole as well. In all honesty, he didn't seem particularly enthusiastic. Didn't really kind of, despite scoring a few goals as you've mentioned, he didn't really kind of make himself a bit of a favourite with the supporters. You know, I believe that they were quite keen to keep him for the latter half of last season, but, you know, he was quite quick to get back down to England and, you know, have another opportunity there. And, you know, you wonder, is it, well, this is the best I'm going to get, so I might as well take it. Again, something that was levied at Christopher Long in the summer. So there's a wee bit of something there to prove that he genuinely wants to be at Fir Park. We hope we can pick up from kind of where he finished in terms of his kind of goals that he did get. You know, the one that kind of sticks in mind is the goal at Ibrox. He was finished that one with aplomb, and hopefully he'll be finding the net quite regularly again. It casts some doubts as to what we're going to do going forward. Are we going to have with a revert to the kind of 4-3-3? Are we going to see, you know, someone emerge in the kind of wing again? You know, the kind of reference there was that, you know, one of these players that can play all across the front three. So are we going to see him with Sherwin? Are we going to see him in the Hasty? Does it just give you the option, or a better option, if you need to revert to the formation during the course of a game for whatever reason? what we're going to do if we play two strikers. You know, there seemed to be an emergence of kind of semblance of partnerships there with both Watt and Long and both Watt and Lang. So with another kind of central striker into the equation as well, it kind of muddies the water to a certain extent. And your options are good, but your options are becomes a point where you're, you know, the old saying, throwing shite at the wall and seeing what sticks almost. So interesting times to see what the manager's was going to come up with in terms of his selection and forward line going forward. But ultimately, if you've got someone that's been proven to score, you know, a handful of goals in a brief spell beforehand, you would hope that can be taken on again in a second spell with us and to the benefit of the team going forward.
In terms of outgoings, Pepe today, Robbie Hemphrey, young goalkeeper leaving for Stoke City, yet another player off the East conveyor belt, getting a move down south, kind of following the likes of Rhys McAleer, Stuart McKinstry, who have made similar moves in the last year or so. So the academy continuing to thrive and produce young talents. Again, like McAleer and McKinstry, though, the only thing that sticks in your throat a wee bit is that they've left before we've really got to see any of them in a Motherwell jersey, if anything at all in some cases.
Again, money talks, doesn't it? But listen, that you just want to see the next kind of a McFadden, Turnbull, Alan Campbell coming through, playing the games and seeing where they go. But at the end of the day, they're obviously getting advice that, again, I go back and beating the drum, it's about finances and they probably see themselves getting a good start. So I can't really blame them for it's frustrating from a fan's point of view. But just going off the topic a wee bit, I was flabbergasted with regards to the valuation that I think it was Hibs that had offered $200,000 to sign Alan Campbell. I couldn't believe I was reading it and actually seeing Peter Hartley had said times it'd be 10 and he might be getting close to what he's worth. But I mean, I can't understand where that valuation would come from. Aye, all right, his contract's coming out, but surely we would be doing more in a tribunal than that. It just seems absolutely ridiculous.
I think maybe Leanne Dempster's thinking back to the times where those were the kind of bids that were being placed for the players that we had at that point, where the financial situation was that you would have probably genuinely considered something like $200,000 for a player going into the last 6 or 7 months of his contract. I mean, you think he likes a Jamie Murphy, that Sean Hutchison, something like that, where there were kind of derisory bids made for players going into the end of their kind of contracts. But our situation was that you had to consider them.
And I think that they've proven that that's, while it's a bit of a lowball tactic, it's also quite a successful tactic. You look at Kyle McGuinness going to Hibs yesterday. Maybe the feeling is that clubs at the lower end of the financial scale in Scottish football, and certainly in the top flight, might be more susceptible to the derisory bid just now because they are beginning to worry about shortfalls and money, and Christ, Hackies aren't even going to get through the group stages of the Betfred at this rate. But you just think that maybe testing the waters isn't the worst idea. Yeah, we watch Alan Campbell on a weekly basis, so we know his pedigree, we know how good a player he is. But in terms of his value, without signing a new contract, his value to us is more playing every week than any monetary value that we could get for him just now, because that contract's running down. At the moment, it doesn't look like he's going to sign what's been put in front of him. So we do run the risk of losing him for nothing. And I guess it's the stage where you've got to weigh up, is it worth keeping this player, which in case it is under any sort of doubt or scrutiny here, I absolutely do think that we should be going all out to keep Alan Campbell in terms of to the end of the season. we talked about the possibility of paying him a inflated wage to make sure he remains at the football club and perhaps gets us a deal akin to what we got for David Turnbull, which I think is unrealistic in the sense that Alan doesn't grab the headlines or possibly doesn't have the kind of same sort of showreel that David Turnbull would have. But I think that really at the moment, what we need to be focusing on as a football club is ensuring that the squad we've got is good enough to keep us up. And I think it's going to be tight this season. Teams seem to be very inconsistent. There's very little between top and bottom. So we need Alan Campbell to remain at the football club and ignore any interest. There possibly will be similarly derisory bids come in January, which I had to believe the transfer window just closed. And then you've only got another 3 months before you're going to have to fend off offers yet again. So it's going to be challenging. But to cut a long story and a really long point short there, I do completely agree with you. I think it's par for the course, though, just now, that the teams are going to come in with low-ball offers. And I still think that may happen down south as well, with the EPL deadline not being until the middle of the month.
So I don't even think I would be that as annoyed as I was when Hibs are trying to sign. There's obviously the argument, oh, Hibs are a bigger club and blah, blah, they've got more season ticket holders and stuff like that. But if a footballing point of view, what's Alan Campbell really going to gain with going to Hibs? I mean, look at Hibs' history. They've been relegated twice in the last kind of 5-6 years. What benefit would that have in his football career? I would say absolutely zero. Financially, they're a bigger club. They've got more supporters, yes. But success, they won the Scottish Cup against Rangers a few years back. But other than that, they've not done much more than us on paper. I just would be absolutely sick to the core if he signed for Hibs. I was talking to a workwear guy today, he's a St Mirren fan, he's the same about losing again. He spoke highly of him, I'd never really seen a great deal of him. But he's saying that he'd have felt a lot better if he'd went away and progressed his career down south with an option of moving up. But taking a sidestep, I think, just makes that blood boil a wee bit.
And I can get why, and I can get it from both sides, but I was merely playing devil's advocate there in terms of, I think that in this kind of culture and with agents and such like, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a few planted stories there just to further hype up Alan Campbell, and his performances are doing enough of that for himself. But there's no danger that an agent isn't going to be pushing to get his client the most wages that he can possibly get him. And I think the real reality of the situation is, even at a likes of a Hibs or an Aberdeen, Alan Campbell's potentially going to get 3-4 times his wages. That makes it an attractive prospect. I know that he's an ambitious young guy and he's got all the talent to go really far in the game. But as we mentioned with David Turnbull in the bid from Celtic, and again, there'll be people listening going, well, much bigger wage on the table there, Andy. Yes, there was, but at the same time, the first thing that everyone said when that second offer came in, or the second approach came in, and eventually signed in the dotted line at Parkhead, was, well, it's a short career. You saw the injury he got only a year before, so it's kind of difficult not to look at it from both sides of the coin. And I think from a Muddle point of view just now, the real cause for celebration we've got is that we've managed to retain his services through the transfer window. And who knows what happens from here. If you get to January and you are really concerned about the finances, because I think the one thing that we missed off when we were talking about fans not being allowed back in is the fact that Muddle have promised to honour season tickets for every game missed. That's already mounting up to potentially half price season tickets next season for those that choose to take it, and all albeit there has been fans that, that wrote off games at the end of last season and upped their well society and invested in cardboard cutouts, new strips and everything else. But at what point do fans maybe pull away from long-term commitments when they don't have any guarantee of actually getting into the ground? Again, it's causing a headache for many football clubs. I would imagine it is.
Well, certainly is. I think we've discussed, obviously, where we think it's going to go, but I think it is a difficult situation because we don't know what's going to happen 6 months, a year down the line. And if we're in the situation whereby we're, the season ticket renewals and we're still in this situation whereby we're still not getting into the stadium, because I don't think when I renewed my season ticket that I thought in October, November, I would still be potentially going for another lockdown. So I think I think in every aspect of life, nobody can give a definitive answer, and it's just as they say, unprecedented times.
Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for this week. I know we maybe skipped over the footballing aspect of it quite a bit there, and I think in the back of two heavy defeats, then we're more than entitled to. But we can look ahead to St Mirren nearer the time. In the meantime, enjoy the international break. Must admit, I never ever do, but big game for Scotland, and maybe that is something to look forward to, and maybe come Thursday night I'll be slightly more enthusiastic for it. But as always, your time is so much appreciated, and I've really enjoyed it again tonight.
No bother, always a pleasure.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back on Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.